folks. Welcome back. Thank you for being here. It's so good to have you with us. I want to thank you for taking the time and for your interest and dedication when it comes to many of the important and interesting topics that we discuss on this program. I'm Henrik Palmgren from Red Ice Radio, and we go fearlessly into the territories and areas where few others do. Intrepid investigations. We, of course, do the best we can to find the truth and cutting-edge material that makes you question the official stories that we get through the academic world and the media. And hopefully this will make you wonder and question the situation that we find ourselves in today. Consequently, when you do this, some people get upset because, well, let's face it, the truth is hard to accept and it can be very heavy. Consequently, we just got censored on iTunes by Apple. They no longer list our program among their other podcasts there. They took the feed down here a few days ago, and they have banned it in every country around the world from being accessible by people that want to listen to our program via the iTunes listening or podcast service. I think we've been there for about 5 years, but when you do get too close to what really is going on, well, then this is the result, folks. But have no fear. If you like to listen to our program on your iPhone or iPad, you still can access it without any problem. We recommend getting your hands on a podcast app outside of the default one that Apple adds to your iPhone or iPad on the get-go, like the grumpy censoring nanny that they are. We, for example, recommend that you can use one of the following podcast apps: Downcast or iCatcher podcast app or RSS Radio podcast downloader. And this last one I mentioned, by the way, is for free, and the other two costs about $2.99. But they are available in Apple's App Store, and there are, of course, other podcast apps available as well. But just keep in mind, if you are a member and want to add the members feed, make sure that the podcast app you get your hands on accepts password-protected feeds. But then when you've gotten your hands on one of these, you can simply add the radio program RSS feeds in the podcast app, and you're good to go. You can add the free feed that we have on redicecreations.com if you're not yet a member. If you are a member, you can add the feed that we have on redicemembers.com, and you get both hours, and you can also go back in our archives this way all the way back to 2006 and subscribe to our feeds divided up per year. If you want the full instructions with, you know, images and links and everything else, if it was kind of complicated to remember this, we have all of this available for you on redicemembers.com. Just click on FAQ in the menu and then go to the device that you want to listen with. It's very simple. We'll also provide you with an updated version of the help section that will be available soon here on redicecreations.com so that you can access everything as you should be able to. And by the way, one more thing here, you can still subscribe to our radio show by adding our podcast RSS feed manually on iTunes on your computer. And from there, I believe you should be able to sync this content to your iPhone, iPad, or iPod. All right, time to get to our guest. Today, we're talking with Björn Nordström from the Swedish website of Pixlat.info, an online magazine and a news service with focus on the failures of multiculturalism and the failure of mass immigration into Sweden specifically. Björn is currently living in America, partially due to the massive censorship and dangers of prosecution that comes with voicing this kind of criticism in the new totalitarian tyranny of the crazy cultural Marxist society that is Sweden. Our focus today is also going to be on the many problems that Sweden, America, and Europe is facing with Islam and multiculturalism. Welcome, Björn. It's good talking with you today. Thanks for coming on the program with us.
Thanks for having me.
You bet. So there are a lot of topics I want to discuss with you today. There's just so much that is happening in our country as it's circling the drain, unfortunately, related to the PC programming, mass immigration, state feminism, the general environment of the kind of leftism that we're experiencing in Sweden right now. But I just want to make this clear to our audience here as well. You write for the website of Pixlat, which, by the way, folks, means basically depixelated, meaning the unmasked or non-cosmetic version of event. Maybe you can just tell us first, Björn, when you started writing for the site and kind of how you got onto this very politically incorrect path, and I'm saying that in consideration to the type of environment that we have in Sweden, that the left educational system that everyone goes through. I think it's a miracle that people actually develop the mental capability of breaking out from it overall. So what was the path like for you, Björn?
Actually, I went through the Swedish school system myself. I ended up in the U.S. to go to college, and it was when I went to the U.S. after a few years that I learned that I was indoctrinated in Sweden quite a bit more than I thought. So I learned how to think critically and independently and do a lot of my own research to find the answers to big questions in the U.S. I never learned that in Sweden. So, you know, the years went by, and I kind of developed those skills as part of the American educational system, actually. And then I ended up on PixLive because a friend of mine recommended it when it started. And so I wrote like a couple of letters to them, and they published them. And then I think that people liked them because I brought an international perspective. And then the site asked me if I wanted to be a regular writer. And I said yes. And also, I don't fear any form of prosecution from the state of Sweden in a way, shape, or form. So I feel pretty confident that I can speak honestly and not have the, you know, lose my job or, you know, any other, you know, consequence of being truthful in the matter.
Yeah. Well, that's a real possibility here. We'll actually talk a little bit more about that later, the prosecution aspects and how some laws actually are going to change now as we go into the next year here. But I think a lot of people will be amazed by the statement that you just made concerning the schooling system and that you actually learned to think critically in America, because, of course, as we see today, Björn, we have a lot of people actually promoting the Swedish style of government and education as well all over the world. And I think Americans primarily are being hammered with this. I've noticed that when I look at the international media anyway. How about you?
I'm a school teacher myself, and I have never came across anything, at least in my state, and definitely not in my school system, where they would look at Sweden as an example. I never heard anybody even mention Sweden in a sentence.
I'm glad to hear that. I hear it from all the college professors. That's why I bring it up. The more
many colleges are sort of leftists, yes. But if you look at the PISA results, and my school is based on, we are scientifically oriented, right? So our school is based on what works, you know, practices that work. And we look at PISA results. And we look at the PISA results saying, okay, we can't look at Sweden as an example of a great school system because Sweden is like way down there. You know, we look at maybe Finland, Canada, and some Asian schools. So Sweden is not part of the conversation in my school because there's no evidence that Sweden has any decent schools. And we look for evidence of good schools, and we don't find those evidence in Sweden. We find them elsewhere in different places.
Yep.
So scientifically oriented in that case. And when I moved to the US, I'll be honest with you, I went through an entire, I spent 10 years in college. I have like 3 degrees, right? So, and I'm saying that with humility, you know, I'm not trying to brag. I have humility around it. But 10 years in four different colleges, and I've went through, you know, countless courses and professors, I have never really felt there was any leftist Sweden type indoctrination at all whatsoever. In fact, I've been encouraged to investigate, research, think critically. That's what I've been hammered with. And I don't know if I've been lucky to find those professors or colleges. I think that the leftists here in the U.S. is not near as leftist in Sweden. I think we're talking about two different ways of leftist operations.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think you're right. Of course, definitely. No, I think it's the Nordic model of overall. It might not be the educational system. I've heard Finland. You're right about that. I've definitely heard that being a...
Finland a lot in American papers. It used to be, actually. Sweden was mentioned in terms of healthcare many years ago when I moved to the U.S., when Sweden was probably the number one healthcare system in the world, definitely in Scandinavia. But now the report came out only a few days ago that Sweden has the worst healthcare system in Scandinavia. I don't know if you saw that.
Yep, I did.
Yeah. So who is going to refer to Sweden anymore in terms of great healthcare, right? They don't. We are losing. We used to be on a pedestal in many areas. We are no longer. So when you talk about education, you look to Finland. You talk about healthcare, you look for some other country. You don't look for Sweden anymore. And that's why Sweden is disappearing as a focal point of what works. Sweden now is becoming more a talking point of how things can go wrong, because I read papers in Canada and I read in Australia and in the US as well about some of the major problems happening with Sweden, with anti-Semitism in Malmo, horrible integration in Sweden in general. That's now what Sweden is being known for more and more. I read about in Time magazine a while ago, in November last year, about the hen concept. And that was also something that Sweden is being known for, where they are dehumanizing people and making them genderless, those kind of things that are very negative to me, in my opinion. You don't want to be known for all these negative things, but that's where Sweden is.
Yeah, there seems to be a delay time in how this has been perceived, because I still hear from people, not too often, because we have actually covered quite a bit now on a lot of the horrible aspects of what is occurring within Sweden. But still, despite that, there's still people who, oh, I hear your country's so great and there's no corruption and everything else. But to me, Bjorn, it seems that we've had a really concerted effort in the attempt of actually, I can't view it any other way, destroying what Sweden have. What are the reasoning behind this? What are we seeing and what is happening in Sweden?
I don't know the reasoning behind it, because I think a rational human being doesn't understand why they're doing it. I do believe that they are trying to create some kind of American model where it's more individualized and hiring. Basically, you're trying to break down, especially Fredrik Reinfeldt, break down some of the labor laws and be able to hire cheap labor. I can only see there's some financing stuff going on there where there's money involved in order to create the new type of society. But as far as, you know, the welfare system, the schools, I have no understanding. I don't think any reasonable person understands why they're doing it, because clearly by the numbers, by the facts, by statistics, everything points to the fact that Sweden is no longer the type of country and provides the type of education or healthcare or welfare to the population that it once did.
Yeah, it's absolutely horrible. Wage dumping is a huge part of this, I believe, as well. How does that work, though, together with the, you know, the high employment fees that we have, the immense taxes and the strong unions and everything else? It seems like this now is catching up with them in that regard, because we have, of course, a huge sector primarily within the youth of the immigrants coming in that basically do not get employed in any capacity within Swedish society.
Well, at some point, something has to give, right? At some point, you're basically saying we have these labor laws and protection, you know, the wages, the laws about wages and stuff. But at some point, something has to give. You cannot keep up all the same laws and labor laws you have now and expect an improvement in, let's say, employment rates among uneducated, illiterate immigrants, right? Something has to give. What's going to give, unless they start taking fewer, in other words, limiting immigration, which doesn't seem to be on the table right now, the other option is to start breaking down labor laws, because that's the only solution. You have to solve the problem somehow, hopefully. And the two solutions is fewer immigrants or breaking down labor laws so that employers can hire people cheaper. And I believe in the future, Sweden is going to be more like the U.S., where you have fewer and less powerful unions. I think that's the only road Sweden can go, unless they start limiting immigration and do what the rest of the world is doing, you know, which is selective and restrictive immigration.
As at the same time, we have the U.S. pushing for a higher minimum wage, for example. So it's like it's a swap occurring here almost, right?
Strangely, it is. But that assumes that, you know, you're not going to have an influx or a huge growth of the labor pool with not the same growth of jobs to keep up with that labor pool growth.
Yeah.
So I think that in the U.S., you still have a lot of jobs. Like, you can go to your local store. I go to local Hannah for my grocery store, and I see a bunch of young kids, like teenagers, packing groceries. Those jobs don't exist in Sweden, but they exist here. And if they bump the salaries up from the minimum wage they have now, maybe another dollar, well, I think they're still going to keep those jobs. I think it's reasonable, because those jobs are still needed. People expect those services. But those jobs don't exist in Sweden to begin with. So
exactly. Hmm. Yeah, it's not exactly. I've tried to explain that to people as well. It's not a service-oriented society, and it's way too expensive to employ people on that level. You just can't afford it, basically. So you end up with very few people running a company in that regard. But this is changing too in the U.S., though. I mean, look at the borders open to the south. There was a prospect of, I think, over 5 million. Well, that's not even getting to the illegal immigration that is happening right now. But even 5 million people being dragged into America during the next couple of years or so, was some kind of reports coming out. So those jobs that they're talking about, you know, the bag boys and everything else, they're slated to go as well if this continues in America.
Well, I think the U.S. is facing that major problem. They also have to, I think, make the same kind of decision that Sweden has to make is, okay, if we are to accept all this huge influx of illegal and legal immigrants, then we are going to have, we can no longer, you know, increase the minimum wage every single year because, you know what, they're going to hire some illegal or somebody else to do the work cheaper. It just works that way. Or the option is you want to keep them, you know, increasing those minimum wages. And the option is then, okay, we have to cut down on the immigration so that the local teenagers can get that job. I think that the U.S. is facing a very similar situation, but not necessarily to the same extent right now. But it's definitely here.
Now, do you believe that this is a globalist, international, capitalist agenda? And I'm not talking about the free market now. I believe that that's a completely different thing to what we're talking about. But is this the reasoning behind it? Do you think that this is a conglomerate of very powerful businesses that are regulating global politics in this way to dump the wages and make more money out of it in return?
Well, what are businesses created based on to make money? That's the purpose of a business, to make money. Business are not charities. Business are there to make money. And one way of making money is to dump salaries, right? And if you can have a huge influx of people cross a border so you can then dump the salaries, then obviously it's going to give more profit to the business owners, right? So yeah, it's in the business owner's best interest to have higher immigration because then they have a larger pool of workers to choose from. And somebody is always going to be willing to work for less money than somebody else. If you have 50 people applying for the job instead of 5, obviously you can find somebody's willing to work for less. So somebody's making money. There's no doubt about that. I mean, that's just obvious.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about what kind of conditions this is going to create, though, in the long term. Because sure, in the short term, you might make more money, and it might be a long short term plan. But nonetheless, I mean, these people are behind this, lobbying for these kinds of laws to be passed and everything else. It seems that they're kind of lacking any type of ideology and awareness of a concept of the nation and the people itself. That there is an awareness there of those kinds of aspects. It's like, that's gone out the window, and now all they're thinking about is the short-term, profits coming in, right?
Well, remember, we live in a quarterly economy, right? Every 3 months, companies have to report to their stockholders, right?
Yep.
That's how it works. So every 3 months, you're going to have to figure something out to give this, to make the stockholders happy. Well, what do? You can lower wages. You can do whatever you need. In that kind of economy, who has time to sit back and think what's best for the country? Well, I don't care about the country. I just care about my stockholders so that they can make their money and I can make my money. Also, these international corporations, if you think about it globally, you have corporations that have an interest in 50, 100 countries. They couldn't care less. They have not pledged an allegiance to a country.
No.
They pledge an allegiance to their corporation. Their corporation goes before any country, meaning they will do whatever it takes to make the corporation benefit. And if that means screwing up a country, so be it, because the country doesn't matter to them, because they have the benefit of being rich as can be, live where they want. So to them, being a citizen of a country means nothing, because they have the means to do what they want regardless.
Yeah, they don't live in a transitional neighborhood. I mean, Apple has more money than the U.S. government now, there you go.
In Dearborn, Michigan, or in Compton, California, or in Cedar Riverside in Minneapolis, Rosengård or Husby, they don't live there. They have houses all around the world, and they can live wherever they want, when they want. So they don't have to worry about the future of a single country. If they mess a country up, they go to the next one. Not a problem.
Yeah.
So they think differently than we do. They think egoistically, not what's best for a country, regardless of their citizenship. They don't think citizenship. They think what's best for them and for the stockholders. And with the multinational corporations, then obviously their decisions, will impact a country negatively or positively, depending on what decisions they make. It's just kind of how the world works now.
Now, despite this, though, long term, what are we looking at here? If we Let's talk about the Western world in specifics. And of course, we need to talk more specifically about Sweden itself here. That's really what we want to focus on. But it's interesting to see what's going to happen in the Western world as we bring in more and more people. We're saying, you know, yes to everybody. There's this economic incentive behind it. But culturally and everything else, what's going to happen?
Well, I think that you're going to start seeing what you see in America. You know, you can look at some of the, you know, cities and towns around America that are plagued by some major, major problems. I mentioned a couple. Dearborn, Michigan, very Muslim, extremely anti-anything that's not Muslim. Cedar, Riverside, huge Somali immigration with enormous problems. Dixon, Toronto in Canada, Somali immigration with enormous problems. So I think you're going to see more and more. You already see that in Sweden too, the Rosengård, Rinkeby, you can name those. Close to 200, according to a report that came out recently. So those problems are going to grow. And you're also going to see what I think you see in America already, in Compton, California, which is the prime example. Latinos and blacks are basically in war with each other.
Yes.
It's huge racism. Compton, California is probably where the epicenter is right now for ethnic conflicts between blacks and Latinos. And I think you're going to start to see those much more in Sweden as well, between groups of people, not involving ethnic Swedes, but actually immigrants of different ethnic groups, because they might not tolerate each other as much as Swedes tolerate others.
Yeah, so far anyway.
Yeah. So I think you're going to start seeing much more and bigger scale of those problems, that I think it's just bound to happen that way. Whatever happens in the U.S., it's only a matter of time until it comes to Sweden. It's just how it goes.
Yeah, and I think we have the religious background is at this stage in a way a little bit different in Sweden, considering the large Muslim population all over the country, as opposed to a few pockets so far in the U.S. But I mean, we have you know, Sunni and Shia conflicts basically drawn out to the street. I saw a couple of articles a while back here about how, for example, in Germany, they had to quell protesters who were like in support of ISIS and some who were not, and now German police have to step in and solve these things, and they're like massive demonstrations and everything else. I mean, this is we're dragging this type of environment onto our streets. And my question has always been, do people actually understand this yet, or are they just so naive that they think that everyone is like the native population, like your average Swede? They're kind of, you know, calm. They're laid back. They don't really have invested interest in religious, you know, ideology in this way. Do people even know what's happening now? You know,
I think that Swedes really have a very poor understanding of culture. We seem to believe if you cross the border to Sweden, you will all of a sudden be the way we want you to be. You got, you know, if you can bring in, like, I don't know, an IS or jihadist, bring him from Syria into Sweden, he's going to be a good citizen. That's our belief. We can reform them into good citizens. We don't understand that culture is so deeply rooted in people. You can bring an IS soldier into Sweden, he's not going to be a good citizen. He's going to probably end up doing his IS thing in Sweden as well. So I think that we are naive to believe that we can reform some of the worst, most uncivilized, barbaric cultures in the world by simply having them cross the border. If that was the case, then why are certain cultures that have immigrated to the U.S. having huge difficulties, while others have had great successes?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because the U.S. has had a much longer immigration history from various cultures. And we can look at cultures immigrating to the U.S. to see the difference between different cultures and their rate of success here in the country. Sweden is now an infant when it comes to those kind of immigrations, and they are going to have, it's going to be a wake-up call very soon.
Yes, there is going to be, and it's going to stand at people's doors, and those who have been complaining on those people who have been complaining, they're going to find out, you know. But the question here is, I've always been intrigued by this question, Björn. Have we somehow lost our kind of cultural anchor to a certain extent in Sweden? Have we become this kind of blank slate where anything, we become like the container for all these other cultures now, and we are getting walked all over on, and we are basically standing to the side of all these other, you know, new cultures and ethnicities and races that are coming in, and we are now becoming some kind of handler or mediator, almost like the neutrality aspect that we've been, you know, to a certain extent struggling with for such a long time. Is this the ideological background to the Swedish psyche, or what are we dealing with here?
My thinking is Sweden has not had the reason, or we have chosen to not participate, to defend. We have not been in war for a very long time. We have lost appreciation for what we have to defend. We assume and take for granted things are as they are. We never had to defend it for generations, right? So there's no patriotism. There's nothing that Sweden feels might be worthwhile defending. I think when you're in war, whatever war that might be, and I'm against all wars, it'd be great if there were no wars, but unfortunately, war exists. But one positive outcome is it strengthens your appreciation for your country, because you start scrutinizing what you have to defend. You defend a certain culture. You understand your culture. You want to defend your culture. You want to defend your values. Sweden never had to defend those for generations, and I think we have forgotten what they actually are, and that they actually are really important. So I think that Sweden, I don't want to say this in the wrong way, but I think that Norway, after World War II, gained an appreciation, understanding what it means to be a Norwegian. I think Europe gained an understanding, and I think that Europe has lost that now anyways, because it seems like they've opened up other problems.
Well, I always said that, Björn, is this what all those millions of people died for during the World War II, of having a Europe that we're seeing developing now?
They defended against something. They defended their culture and their beliefs and their values and so on, the democracy. And now I think we've forgotten it, and now we're just opening up the doors, letting in the very same problems.
Now, let me ask you, though. I mean, this, what you're talking about here, we've not had what been a year for about 200 years, I think. We're very conflict-free, you know, zone, no level of problematic issues. We've raised our children even in a very bohemian liberal kind of sphere where there's no conflict. We've been isolating the children from any kind of problematic thing. We can see this still now with the political correctness and the idea that no one can get offended. No one is a loser, or there's no winners. Everyone is equal, right? It's this line of thinking that has kind of created a certain set of value systems, which is ironically being challenged now when we're seeing the type of massive immigration that we have, because the values of the West, if we consider that includes our, you know, democratic values, our open society and everything else, in this regard, the West is unique and like no other, you know, country or no other region in the world. But this is the very aspect that's being lost as well. Does not the liberal lefties realize this?
Well, instead of defending our democratic values and our general human values, we are throwing it away. We're basically saying the values that other cultures from outside of Europe are bringing in are better, more superior to the Swedish and European values and cultures. And I have no idea why that's happening. That to me is insane, because if you actually look around the world, you know, the Western world has values and a lifestyle and democracy that's unparalleled, really, throughout history. And now we're basically saying we're going to bring other cultures in, and we're not going to teach them or make them assimilate into our values and democracy. Instead, we're going to give up what we have created that's worked, and we're just going to adopt something else, something that's not working in other countries, obviously, because if it worked in other countries, why are the countries messed up?
Yep, I know what you're saying. Now, I want to talk about the issue of or the problem of integration a little bit later too here, but is, even if there was integration and this worked perfectly well, would you still be for immigration in that regard?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm for immigration. I'm just, you know, I don't think you can have a globalized world and close your borders completely. I think that's an impossibility, because people are, for whatever reasons, are going to be coming and going. And I think that's where we are in the world. But I believe that the way that Sweden is doing it is a completely unsuccessful, and it will prove to be extremely catastrophic for Sweden in the long run. But I do believe there has to be some form of immigration, restrictive and selective, like Canada and America, for example, Finland too, probably, that you are tapping into some of the skills needed in order to benefit your country.
Well, we talked with a professor out of New Brunswick a little bit while ago as well, actually, about the model of multiculturalism in Canada that has been hailed like one of the better ones. And he was extremely critical, in the same way that he considered that this also is eroding the the European heritage of Canada, because that's what it is. The Canadian, country was built on those values as well. And he's seeing that this actually is tremendously detrimental. And actually, it's the same aspect. It's been more kind of calm in a way, which is perceived then as more successful. But if we look at success as being an erosion of Western values, then yeah, it has been successful in Canada too.
Well, I think you're looking at two different things. I think that if you are taking one culture and you're starting to basically have parallel cultures living in the same country where you have different cultures, I think then you have a problem. So I think if the conversation is about culture, that's one thing. That being said, are we looking at ethnicity or culture? Because those are two different things. So to me, multicultural seems to mean that you're going to have a bunch of different cultures at the same time. And eventually, based on history of the world, cultures will end up fighting each other in a war. This is going to happen that way. That's throughout history.
And that's why they're trying to erode culture. They're trying to create a monoculture where basically, they say multiculturalism, right? But really what it's going to result to is a kind of a glob between a blend or some kind of accumulation between the different variables of it, that this somehow that the current generations are to be sacrificed for this greater purpose of a fantasy version of world peace that's going to come 2, 3, 4, 5 generations down the line, right?
And the reason it's not going to happen is unless you have one culture that I'm especially critical of, and that's, and I'm talking about not individuals, I'm talking about the culture and religion. Islam does not seem to be very sympathetic toward other religions, and Muslim cultures don't seem to be very sympathetic toward other cultures. So what I'm saying is, if you have the Muslim culture growing in a country with Islam, then it's just a matter of time before you're going to have a culture clash and a religious clash within that country, because the Muslim cultures and Islam do not tolerate other cultures and religions. And that's why I think it's really important to, in the Western world, to say, okay, this is where the Western culture, this is where we are. You have to assimilate. You can privately believe something else, but as a country, this is what we need to do. Otherwise, we know, look at America, culture conflicts.
Definitely. And now they're in this kind of idea too, that as we've kind of alluded to here, that no, now it's shameful to assimilate. That's become a bad thing now. Now you can keep everything that you want to have. You can just live in your kind of micro pocket of having Bangladesh, but within, a suburb in Sweden, right? That's kind of the idea now, it seems like.
Yeah, but obviously, if that works so great, how come that there's a, ethnic war between Latinos and blacks in Compton? How come in Cedar Riverside in Minneapolis, there's an enclave, Somalis living completely separate from the rest of society? Dearborn, Michigan, a Muslim town city outside of Detroit, living completely separate, not every single individually, but the society as a whole, parallel societies. If this idea of multiculturalism being so great and working, how come Dixon, Toronto, speaking of Canada, how come that it seems when a culture is growing in a certain country, all of a sudden it ends up being a parallel society more than anything else?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, segregation is something that occurs naturally, I believe. There's a tendency, and again, this is something that whites, and specifically then Swedes, absolutely lack, that there is a, for the lack of a better term, there's no racial awareness, a consciousness of that in there. It's been kind of, to a certain extent, taken away from them. But I think that this is going to be reawakened as they realize that they're being targeted either for their ethnicity or for their culture or race or whatever. But segregation is something that naturally has occurred. There's a tendency within you, I think biologically, to want to live with your own. And there's nothing wrong with that. That doesn't mean that you hate everybody else or want to kill everybody else, but it means that you have a propensity and there's it's easier to have it in that way when there's a cultural foundational, kind of framework of what you can, how you can live your life and basic, interaction between people is understandable. It's not every interaction doesn't become about reading someone from a different culture in a way. It can be quite exhausting, for the lack of a better term, in terms of, if you face people that doesn't understand your language in one, part of the street, and then the next one, you there's a cultural conflict, whatever, right? So what do you think about segregation?
You have the term white flight. That's been the case in America for many years. You even see it in Sweden now. And I'm going to give an example very shortly. And you also see it in America by immigrants. Why do you think immigrants from Somalia, many of them end up in Cedar Riverside?
Because they choose it, right?
Because they choose it. That's a choice. Yeah. That's where the community lives. Why do you think a lot of Muslims in that coming to America end up in Dearborn, Michigan? Why do you think a lot of Latinos end up in Southern California or in Arizona or in Texas and not in Vermont? Because that's where their culture lives, right? That's a choice they make.
Yeah.
So that's how it works. I just read about a few months ago, I read an article in Närkes Allehanda, actually, and it was about Vivala. I live in Örebro, so I'm very familiar with the city. Vivala is a used to be, you know, just blue-collar, working-class neighborhood. Now it's like 80-90% immigrant, right?
Yes. I went through Örebro last year. I was amazed. I didn't know where I was. It was amazing.
Happened the last few years, very recently, for lack of a better term, the whites, the ethnic Swedes, have moved out systematically from Viva into a Swedish segregated, and I forgot the name of that other neighborhood. So they have chosen to move out from the multicultural, whatever you want to call it, immigrant Vivala to another place. I have friends in many cities who do the very same. They are right now moving to a ethnic Swedish Södermalm, Stockholm, all the Swedish journalists, a lot of them. They choose to live away from multiculturalism.
And yet they write about how great it is.
Exactly. And that's a hypocrisy, obviously, right there. But I think that people choose to do that. Whether you admit it or not, you choose to do it. And admitting it, you're being honest about it. And if you're lying about it, like Swedish journalists, all you are is hypocrite about it. And that's not going to, that's even worse. But that's how people do it. You know? You can look at Sweden, you can look at France, you can look at England, you can look at Canada, you can look at the US. It's just how it goes. It doesn't matter where you look. You cannot give. So when I hear Swedish politicians say, oh, the multiculturalism in the United States, it's like, if you have no idea what you're talking about. What does that really mean? Do you understand the segregation going on here? Do you understand Cedar Riverside, Dearborn, Michigan, you know, all these? No, you don't. You just throw it out there because it sounds great.
Yeah. And even Ferguson is a proof of this as well, now what's happening, because that was divided right away on racial lines. And now it turns into a racial issue, you know?
Exactly. And guess what? The Latinos are now literally kicking out the blacks. The blacks were the first ones to live in Compton. In Compton, the blacks used to live in Compton. Latinos came in. They're driving out the blacks now.
Yeah.
And Ferguson, that was a Missouri situation right there.
Yep. Yep.
The riots.
So can we at this point continue to claim that it's just naive ideologues in the West, specifically within the political branches, and that are kind of trying to delude themselves that no, it'll still work. All we need is another program. All we need is a bit more, millions of crowns to pour into it, and we're gonna solve it. Or is there something else driving this? Do you think?
I think there's no evidence anywhere to really prove that it's working. And whatever drives it, I don't think you can spend enough money to make it work either, because unless you start, I guess, paying people off, like literally give people a salary, say, go live in Husby, and you will give you $1 million a year. You might do it. But it's not working that way. I really don't know any ideology other than we have created a monster, we have created this thing, and now we're trying to justify its existence. We have it, we open it up, and now we need to try to justify it while we have it.
Well, and there's a flip side to this as well, because, and this is a psychological issue, I think, for those people who have implemented, they're in a situation now where they will never, ever admit that it has failed or that it's wrong, because that means those who were critical of immigration were right all along, and they can't have that, right?
Of course not. And you can't compare the U.S. and even Canada with Europe and Sweden, because the U.S. is sort of based on multiculturalism to begin with, whatever you want to call it. It just happened.
Well, no, I mean, I object to that, because in 1965, before the Immigration Act was changed in America, it was, 98% white Europeans living here. And this has changed incredibly fast.
And I didn't know the number. I have no idea.
Yeah, look into the numbers. Look into 1965. of when this changed and realized that it was like tremendously quick that this occurred. And actually similar in Sweden, right? 1970s. And then today I actually read about the, what was it called again? The Lucia beslutet, the decision. Do you know about that decision?
Read about it, yep. I think it was 75, if I'm mistaken.
Actually, it was 89 that this came into existence. And they said in 1989, they said, all right, we have to change it because it was a doubling of asylum seekers into Sweden the year after. And what they did was that they said, all right, so we're gonna change on what pretenses people can come into Sweden on because we can't just handle it. And then it turned out there was later when Carl Bildt, the famous you know, moderate Bilderberger that actually came in 1991 and tore this decision up. And since that time, you had a flood of immigrants coming into Sweden.
Yeah, I don't know the details, but that sounds reasonable.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy, isn't it? And so this has been, of course, part of the agenda, part of the plan, you know, to kind of deconstruct it in this way. And they continue to push it as it's, you know, the greatest thing ever. But what more would you say to people who still believe that multiculturalism works? It's an issue that's going to lead to world peace. I think that a lot of people, Bjorn, they've taken this upon their shoulders and they've said, all the issues that have been created in the past, in their view, has been due to these, you know, aspects of let's say nations. It's been on the aspect of divisions between, you know, ethnicities and races and everything else. So I think that they see no other way out of the situation by just trying to blend everything up and try to eradicate these differences. But my point has been, I think that there can be such a thing as peaceful and non-aggressive nationalism. Would you agree with that?
Oh, I believe so. And I think if you look at, first of all, show me the evidence of a country that's hugely successful incorporating a bunch of different cultures into one mix. There's no country existing like that. And if you look at maybe a couple of the most peaceful countries that are the most stable, peaceful today, you're looking at Japan and Korea, for example, right?
Yeah.
Monocultural, nationalistic, monocultural, defenders of their own culture to the death.
Yeah, they're trying to change it in Japan now, I know, but...
I didn't know that. I had no idea.
They're doing the best they can. I think even Council on Foreign Relations spoke out right after Fukushima, strangely enough, and they said, now it's a great opportunity to try to push multiculturalism on Japan. I don't think they've been successful, though, but there's been rumors within the country that the small Korean branches have actually started to criticize Japan and said that they're being discriminated against and everything else to get the UN to come in there and pass, you know, laws to begin this process now.
So I'm wondering then, how would Japan improve as a country by, for example, open up society to a large Muslim culture or a Somali culture? Why would Japan benefit from that? I don't see that.
My question as well. Obviously, this is going to lead to tremendous problems.
What I'm saying is there might be. So I think we have to make a distinction between culture and culture here. You know, if you were to open up Japan to maybe some Koreans, you might have some successes, right? But if you were to open up Japan to maybe Somalis, you might have a lot of problems. So I think that open up, you know, Canada to Swedish immigrants with Swedish culture, it's okay. I think it works pretty well. So I think it depends on also culture and culture, how closely related the cultures are to each other to begin with.
Well, of course, yeah. Because you had a natural movement of people. Migrations have always occurred in history, but it's been due to proximity. It hasn't been by shipping in people with airplanes year after year, you know?
Earlier about, you know, my view on immigration, I was thinking, I don't mind if Norwegians, highly educated Norwegians, cross the border to Sweden to become to work as a doctor. I don't mind that. I think it's great.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, so I think we have to kind of define, what are we talking about? Are we talking about illiterate Somalis flooding a country, or are we talking about some, you know, a few of a culture that seems to be assimilating very easily and contributes to the country to a great extent? So who are we talking about?
Yeah, very important. Now, what this is going to cause in the long run, then, is going to lead to a lot of problems, economic issues, a lot of bloodshed and violence, I believe, unfortunately, because that seems to be where this is going. And that means then, at this stage, Bjorn, that even if people are not aware of it or not, those people who are responsible for this are actually going to, in the long run, their decisions is going to cause a tremendous amounts of hardship and violence and everything else, because they have a naive idea of what they want to try to see implemented in the world, correct?
I have said all along for a couple of years now, several years, that, you know, the Balkan, the former Yugoslavia, is where Sweden is heading, right there in that direction. There's no doubt in my mind, because you cannot have extremely opposing cultures living next door within the same borders who don't tolerate each other at all. I'm thinking, for example, the Muslim culture that's obviously has a lot of difficulties adopting to the Western values and West democracy. And sooner or later, when the numbers get enough, then they will, in one way or the other, take up weapons. You know, ethnic conflicts, it doesn't have to do with religion, but ethnicity. You know, you saw, again, the Balkans, Compton, California. It's not a cultural, it might be cultural in the background, but primarily it's ethnics, you know, the blacks and the Latinos. For whatever reason, they don't like it. They hate each other, yep. And they just go at it.
Yeah.
Why would not that happen in Sweden? You tell me why that's happening all over the world. Why will it never happen in Sweden?
Because Swedes will just back down until we're disappeared from the off this map, you know. Well, I mean, it's ridiculous because it's starting to happen on a small scale already. The violence that you're talking about there. I mean, God, I've seen some videos where there are fights between, you know, people and stuff like that. They're out drinking on the weekends and they're, you know, this is bound to happen. And, you know, whatever people, you know, think about that or whatever relationship they have to that, it doesn't matter. I believe it's, you know, kind of part of human nature, a propensity to kind of try to, protect and preserve your own and everything else. And I think that's why it's very important to them as well, of trying to educate this out of people, that this ideology, I feel, Bjorn, is actually a war on human nature and reality itself, right?
I think that in Sweden, just to get back to that, I don't think that the ethnic Swedes are going to be the ones actively engaged in any major ethnic conflict. I think that you're going to be looking at immigrated cultures. Just like the ethnics, you know, the European Americans are not the ones fighting over in Compton. It's the blacks and Latinos. I think you're going to see the same in Sweden. Non-ethnic Swedes fighting between different cultures because they have a history of fighting each other in their foreign countries. So they bring in the same conflicts into Sweden. And Swedes are going to sit in the sidelines just watching them as go like, oh, boy, here we are.
Yeah, well, let me ask you a little bit more about that when we return after the break here. We're going to take a break in a little bit here and continue to kind of discuss the role of the Swedish people in this, what's going to happen here. And because I believe it to a certain extent that if they get pushed enough into the corner, they're also going to actually, speak up and stand up to this. And I think that we'll initially see political changes due to this. I want to talk a little bit more about the Swedish Democrats and what role they're playing in the political landscape today in Sweden and everything else. But why don't you give us the details about your website? And if there's any other, I don't know if you want to give out your, you know, Twitter feed or if there's another way that people can follow you and your writing, Björn.
Well, I write for Avpixlat, so I think that's just avpixlat.info, I think. I'm not sure. It's just Google.
Yeah, it's info, yeah.
Yeah, and then I go by my real name on Facebook. So just Google up, you know, find my name on Facebook or find my name on Twitter. That's my real name. So I just go by my real name.
All right, we'll have some of the links up here, folks, as well. Björn Nordström and avpixlat.info. That's the website. All right, stay with us, Björn. We'll take a short break. We'll be right back.
We'll be right back.
When we return with Björn, we continue for another hour as we have a lot more to discuss. We talk about the predicament that Sweden is aligning itself up with, unbeknownst to most ideologues that have yet to understand the full repercussions of their suicidal policies. We break down the fantasy of a multicultural society and the unfortunately coming conflict. As we move into next year, Sweden might set out to prosecute people who have a critical outlook on immigration and politicians. We've also seen initial indicators of this in the recent Don Park case, who just was sentenced to 6 months in jail for his humorous art designated to spark conversation around the kind of issues that most Swedes avoid like the plague to talk about. We proceed to talk about the pacification of the Swede, the plague of neutrality, the psychology of how we are raised, and other self-hating Swedes that are brought up to resent themselves and their own people. We also break into the issue of state feminism and breaking up the gender roles. The cultural Marxist who have been experimenting with Sweden has shown how exceptionally stupid the country has become when it comes to our own backward policies. This is not a Western nation anymore. It's dedicated to its own suicide. We discuss the undiscussable, the rape epidemic, and what the statistics are really saying, and why the feminists let down their sisters and refuse to look at the facts in an act of unparalleled betrayal. We end talking more on the erosion of human nature and why this is an important approach for those who seek to dominate, control us, and then finally get rid of us. But there are some glimmers in the darkness. Join us at redicemembers.com for the second hour of this. Go there to subscribe and get full access to all our programs in full, plus videos, films, and additional content. We spare you from commercial interruptions and website ads, so we do appreciate your support. Thank you so much for listening. We'll talk to you right after the break.